Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been about 6 months since the Me Too movement began its sweep through Canada's halls of power. Complaints about inappropriate sexual behavior filtered into the media and cost members of parliament their cabinet roles and their positions in caucus. There were investigations, but also pledges to do better.
Well, Mr. Speaker, time is up. Things need to change.
In January, all members of the House of Commons unanimously agreed to fast-track a bill that would better protect Hill staff from sexual harassment and assault and give them safer avenues through which to complain.
It is never okay that victims far too often...
But that was then. This is now. How has the Me Too movement really impacted the high-stakes world of federal politics in the months since? Has that culture shift, called for by so many, actually taken shape? I'm Sarah Bosveld, senior writer at Chatelaine, in for Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story.
I think the knee-jerk reaction is just to sort of avoid other people rather than addressing it head-on and trying to actually sort through something that's really difficult.
National Post politics reporter Marie Danielle Smith recently wrote about new research looking into how the Me Too movement has affected people working on the Hill. The research found that most changes in behavior have been driven by fear, not introspection. Hey, Marie Danielle, thanks for coming on.
Happy to be here.
So tell me what's been going on Parliament Hill these past few months around this issue.
So we've started to see politicians getting directly affected by Me Too stories. In the months after the Me Too movement kind of started, federal and provincial politicians started having allegations about them put out in the media. And this prompted a lot of, I think, fear and kind of a reckoning on Parliament Hill, where people wondered if they should be worried about their own past. And you started to see people from Parliament Hill, staffers and politicians, telling reporters that they felt some kind of shift was underway, some kind of cultural change, where people were more open to talking about sexual harassment and where people were starting to change their behavior too, being more careful.
So being more careful really seems to be the theme of this report when this researcher talked to a number of MPs and staffers. What did you sort of find most surprising or maybe even more most concerning about what this researcher reported?
So the thing that she noticed the most in her conversations with MPs and staffers was that people kept mentioning elevators. And it was kind of this very specific example that kept being brought up, where male MPs were starting to say that they didn't want to ride the elevator alone anymore, because if there was a woman in there and they were alone together for 20 seconds or 30 seconds with no, you know, video footage or no one there to vouch for them, that maybe the next day they would see their name in a headline. So this specifically kept coming up. And I think it's what surprised her the most, the researcher who undertook this study. She said that it was kind of shocking that this was kind of seen as the solution to the Me Too movement was, well, if I'm never alone with a woman, then I'll be fine, right? Rather than it being some kind of introspection where people were thinking more deeply about how they should behave towards one another and the respect that they should extend to their colleagues. The most surprising thing for me specifically was that several people told her there were male MPs, or at least one male MP on the Hill, who didn't want to hire female staff anymore, just because of the risk that he perceived there.
The elevator thing is so weird, because that is the exact complaint that was lodged against former Liberal cabinet minister Kent Hare.
Kent Hare has been kicked out of the Liberal cabinet after allegations of sexual misconduct stemming from 2008 and his time at the Alberta legislature.
Prime Minister, it was a comment in the elevator, you know, that he made. So what do you think is going on there in terms of how these MPs are processing these complaints, like that response to a very direct example in, you know, that happened to their colleague?
Well, I think they internalized it because people were describing the way she worded it was a climate of fear. 7 of the 25 MPs she spoke to described it that way. 9 of them said that people were more on their guard now. And we're talking really about male MPs for the most part here, who think that, you know, behavior that they probably wouldn't have even seen as a big deal beforehand is now sort of off limits. There was one example I found interesting that we didn't talk about in my report, but that had an MP questioning whether or not it would be okay for him to hug a staffer with whom he had worked really closely for a long time as she was leaving the job to leave Parliament Hill. He wondered whether it would be appropriate to give her a hug, someone he was really close to. And I think that's kind of where we're at. People are worried about social interactions that ordinarily would have been pretty normal. And this has created kind of a rift between men and women on the Hill.
And that's interesting, too, because it does imperil the existing relationships. You know, what's frustrating to me is that, you know, if you know this woman, can you just ask her if it's okay, you know, instead of refraining completely from any type of behavior that you might have carried out before? You know, that just seems so odd to me. But that truly has been the response.
Yeah, and I would imagine that some of those conversations are taking place, but there's also a whole group of people who just seem to be like afraid to even interact with their female colleagues anymore. And there was one quote from a staffer in this study that I found really interesting. They said, "I see a disconnect between men and women that I haven't seen since elementary school." So you just kind of think of like the boys and girls lining up on opposite sides of the schoolyard, you know, or like a grade 8 dance, you know,
totally.
And that's kind of how things are getting to be now.
Yeah. And you know what? The Me Too movement was never about making men get a taste of the fear women often feel walking around by themselves alone, say. But there seems to be a really odd parallel here, right? You know, I can't get into an elevator alone, you know, and it makes me think of I can't go walk to my car alone without the keys between my fingers. You know, and
right.
if Ottawa is supposed to be, you know, a place where, you know, these are representatives of society making really big decisions for society. You know, what do you sort of see in the idea that they're kind of hashing it out too and dealing with the messiness of Me Too, maybe in the way that is happening out in the world, or maybe it's not happening out in the world. I don't know. What's your take on that?
Well, I think they probably are. It's just that this is such a kind of specific workplace because there's such a big media presence here. There's so much interest in this kind of story right now. There's so much concern that you're going to cause some kind of a media frenzy or that you could hurt your political party by talking openly about harassment. For example, staffers in this study were saying that, like, I think about half of them said that they would rather just leave their job rather than complain about somebody. Around the same number said that they don't even really know how to complain, and no one seems to trust the kind of due process mechanisms that are supposed to exist on Parliament Hill. So I think the knee-jerk reaction is just to sort of avoid other people rather than addressing it head on and trying to actually sort through something that's really difficult. This researcher basically said that she didn't see an open conversation taking place, that people were in silos and a lot of people were afraid to express their opinions on this, whether because they might hurt their political party, whether they might get, you know, quoted in the media, or have complaints levied against them. So it seems to really not have gone very far in the way of like a real introspective conversation.
Yeah, and these mechanisms apparently already exist, and we already have a bill that was unanimously supported, Bill C-65, that was supposed to protect these employees. So it really is interesting to hear that they don't have much faith in that.
I think it's been interesting to see how MPs themselves are now becoming vulnerable, where you might have thought that before that the situation was that staffers were more vulnerable to harassment. Now MPs are vulnerable to harassment complaints, and they're kind of feeling this sense of injustice or this sense of vulnerability that they wouldn't have before. So I think that's been interesting to see.
And that's really been an effect of the Me Too movement too, right? It's like a wake-up call for a lot of these guys in power. And women, too, in some cases, as we have seen in The Hill, there's been a case involving a woman MP, too.
Those reports, NDP leader Jagmeet Singh suspended Ms. Vohor from caucus and called an independent external investigation into the appropriateness of her relationship.
But just the idea of holding powerful people to account, and, you know, when you're democratically elected, you have a lot of responsibility placed on you, and the stakes are also high. So that really seems to be a high stakes scenario. So I also remember being in Ottawa at a political convention this winter, overhearing a group of men making fun of me too. You know, just joking about it at the bar, you know, oh, I brushed by you. Oh, don't complain, you know, about me. Do you hear that happening in the halls of Parliament or around Ottawa?
I'm confident that it's happening. I think it's not probably happening around me very much because, you know, people are very aware of reporters and there's a real fear of the media right now. So what I do know is that in this study, you do have anecdotes of people joking about the movement, joking about harassment, and actually MPs joking about the harassment training that they had to receive this year, earlier this year. There are staffers cited in this research who say that behind closed doors, it's really not taken all that seriously by quite a few MPs. So yeah, that's kind of a problem because you would hope that the kind of training that they receive would sensitize them to what are the real issues here and how is their behavior affecting other people. So to not take that seriously is kind of, it's a little bit shocking.
Now, you're the second woman in your immediate family to work on Parliament Hill. Your mom was there as a staffer in the 80s and 90s. Did she warn you about sexism and harassment on the Hill when you started out working there?
She actually didn't. And I think it's because, you know, nothing egregious had happened to her. And she had largely considered her experience on Parliament Hill to be a positive one. And I would say the same thing about my experience too. But when the Me Too movement kind of got underway, my mom and I had some conversations where she shared some memories that were kind of getting called back by all this talk of sexual harassment. She was sharing memories about, you know, how one time a senator, not her direct supervisor, but just another senator, had invited her to sit on his lap. Little moments like that at the time she probably laughed about, brushed off and was like, okay, that was strange. You know, that was a weird moment, but we're going to move on now. The kind of thing that she wouldn't have necessarily thought to warn her daughter about 20 years later, but she was remembering it now because of all this talk in the media. So we had some interesting conversations about that. And, you know, I had a few of those kinds of moments myself, but it's the kind of culture, I guess, where little things happen every now and then and you don't feel like it's important enough to bring up. So it just kind of gets perpetuated. And it's all these little moments that accumulate.
And I guess these men, too, are like not aware of these actions and haven't been aware of these actions that are breaches, I guess, of proper, respectful, you know, interactions between men and women. And so that has them scared rather than having engaging conversations like the one you're maybe having with your mom. You know, I don't know. Are these men talking to each other about, you know, or with their female colleagues about what's OK and what's not OK? It sounds like that's not happening. That's a shame.
It is. And it's a, you know, it's a good question. Are they discussing it? Because like, I think all you would have to do is think about how you would treat a male colleague differently, right? I mean, a senator who liked women was not necessarily inviting a young male staffer onto his lap at work because that would have been considered more inappropriate than saying that same thing to a young woman, right? So those are the kinds of conversations that should be happening. And it's really hard to tell if they are. Based on this research, we get the impression that they aren't really happening in a sincere way yet.
I did want to ask you about Justin Trudeau's role in all this. Our prime minister was mired in his own kind of Me Too moment a few weeks back with what's become known as the Kokanee Grope.
From that incident almost 20 years ago. And again, I am confident that I did not act inappropriately. But part of
he's pleaded for a lot of introspection and compassion and engagement, but this report sort of shows us that hasn't really been happening. What sort of role and effect do you think the Prime Minister's approach to this and, you know, has really had on the Hill at large?
It's been an interesting thing to watch because the situation that the Prime Minister is embroiled in has to do with a historical allegation from 18 years ago. The person who made the allegation at the time doesn't want to speak with media now. So this is unlike other Me Too stories in the sense that you don't have a complainant who has come forward wanting to share their story. It's instead something that's kind of gotten dug back up after many years. So there's that. But certainly, I think the reaction has been fairly negative towards the way the Prime Minister responded. The idea that we're having a societal moment right now where both sides of the story matter, that's one of the things that he said. Yeah, I think everybody can agree that it's time for us to start caring more about both sides of the story, right? But the thing is that people feel like maybe he hasn't taken enough accountability for or responsibility for his own past and sort of tried to brush it under the rug. We haven't at present seen any more allegations come out against the prime minister. So that also separates it from other Me Too stories where you tended to see several allegations come out all at once. This is why I think it's been easier for the prime minister to sort of move on after that allegation resurfaced.
But at the same time, if the prime minister is vulnerable to these kinds of allegations, you know, however it came up, then what does that mean for you as a backbench MP, right?
Well, exactly. So, I mean, it kind of strikes fear into the heart of probably any male MP. I don't think there's a real trust in the media's ability to discern, you know, an awkward flirtation and separate that from something that was sincere misconduct. And I think a lot of that has to do with a misunderstanding over what the definition of sexual harassment is and a misunderstanding of how much rigor goes into journalistic reporting on these cases.
We're all just trying to figure it out.
It's hard.
It's really hard. What about opportunities for women being imperiled by the Me Too movement? You said that was one of the most surprising things for you or concerning things for you. Why is that so crucial to worry about up on the Hill?
I think that underlying this whole conversation is the sense that if there were more women in politics and more women on Parliament Hill, generally speaking, that we wouldn't have been dealing with quite the same pervasive culture of harassment that a lot of people think is there. That if more women are around, then it's not going to be so common for them to experience harassment. The problem with what we're seeing now in that male MPs, some of whom are unwilling to mentor female staff now because they don't want to be alone together, some of whom may be unwilling to hire female staff. It means that the sort of the overall goal that a lot of people have, which is to bring more women into the fold to change the culture, is going to be more difficult. So that's something that MPs should actively worry about and that political parties should actively try to prevent.
So it's almost in a scenario of stop worrying about your own political reputation, maybe, and start thinking about the future of the party, democracy, this place that we all sort of are meant to hold in this esteem. I don't know.
Imagine if MPs behaved that way on all issues at all times. We'd have such a different political scene.
We sure would. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about this.
Thanks, Sarah.
Marie Danielle Smith is a politics reporter for the National Post. That was a big story. For more, you can visit us online at thebigstorypodcast.ca. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Big Story Podcast. And of course, make sure you subscribe wherever you get your pods. I'm Sarah Bosveld. Thanks so much for listening.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.